With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast that pits two movies with something in common in a fight to the death to see which one comes out victorious. On Monday's episode, we watched Cruise and Nicholson shout at each other. That's my synopsis for A Few Good Men, which means today, Cruise is back. But this time, he's taking on not one man, but an entire company of lawyers as he does battle with the firm.
Mitch, we've just been looking for you. Can you step in here, please?
Mr. Tolar's office. Yes, he's right here, Nina. Transfer him. Mr. McDear? Judge Tarrant's for you. One moment, please.
Come on.
Ain't going nowhere. Rudy, get to the front door.
So which film will lawyer up and which film will be sent down? We'll know by the end of the show. So let's get it on. Welcome to Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken.
Hello, Clashbutters. I'm saying your life as you know it is over. I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
I'm Chris Tilley.
It is part two of A Few Good Men versus The Firm. Chris picked this pairing. Remind us why, Chris, it was a great reason on Monday.
A Few Good Men's a great film, and The Firm is one of the best movies about football hooliganism I've ever seen.
That film went round my school like you wouldn't believe. That was such a big deal. The Gary Oldman of The Firm.
Oh, yeah. The original one.
Yeah.
That is a hell of a film.
Yes, it is. But do you know, so I looked it up. It's only 1 hour, 10 minutes long.
Yeah,
isn't that weird?
I think it was a TV movie.
Oh, was
I think it?
It
was a TV movie initially. Yeah, yeah.
It's good.
Oh, when his kid's got the Stanley knife.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Toddler holding a Stanley knife.
Oh, like Pet Sematary.
Yeah.
Oh,
Gage.
Sorry, bringing it back around to a movie I've seen. Yeah, like Cemetery.
Gage.
Yeah.
Awful.
Yeah, where he slices old Jeb's Achilles tendon. Right. I know, sorry.
I meant when you get hit by a truck, but whatever.
Oh, he doesn't know what he's doing.
Let's talk about The Firm.
Great. All right, I'd love to do that. This Firm, though. So before we get started talking about The Firm, as eager as you are, it is time for a dip into the digital mailbag and a review read by Chris Tilley, a.k.a. Chris Thrilly.
This comes from Tim Bob, 1969, and it's entitled Godfather and Godfather 2. Tim Bob says, I know I'm late to the party, but these episodes really struck a chord with me, especially Vicky's comments about how it was like an immersive experience for her. The story is great, of course, but I totally get how the best movies just make you want to escape to the worlds they create. You were spot on. 100%. The other movie world I'd like to go to is Amity Island. Yes, I am a Jaws obsessive. But unlike Alex, I can accept that Pippin gets eaten. The piece of wood floating on the surface is different from the one her owner throws, and there's even a dog in the background as Brody runs across the bridge after the estuary attack. But whatever, love the podcast, and thankfully my wife got me to listen by saying, you're a movie nerd, this is right up your street. Keep on keeping on, 5 stars.
Oh, that's nice. Oh, I love that reading of Pippin. Or Pippet. Is it Pippet or Pippin?
I think that's why he's done that.
Yeah, I know he has. I can never remember. Yeah. Anyway, I don't think it's very clear in the movie. Regardless, what a bloody good reading. The dog lives.
Yeah.
Happy with that. Very happy.
Yeah. Did you read that thing? I don't know. I saw it. It's like a niche thing. There's more sharks now in around those waters, especially around Martha's Vineyard and stuff, than there have been for years.
Because they like the film.
Because they love it so much. They're like, oh, I want to get my phone. But I'll send it to you because it's going to scare the shit out of you. And it's just there's more sharks around New York and those waters now than have been for years, and people are getting bitten. And no one, I think one person did die a couple of years ago. You'll like this. People, shark people, don't want to call it shark attacks because they don't attack in that way. So you have to call it a shark interaction, and you have to say you've had an interaction with a shark, which means you've been bitten by a shark.
Incident would be better.
Shark incident, yeah, I guess.
A shark incident is fine. It sort of says, well, it was an incident with a shark. Interaction.
You mean a lot of things. It's Broadchurch, isn't it? Interaction.
Yeah, yeah. SeaWorld will be right on that. Oh, we want to come and see the shark show. Pet a shark. Have a little interaction. Stroke it. Ride it. Ooh, we lost another one. Okay. So, I said I'd very quickly mention this. We have, actually, I think I mentioned it already. In fact, I have, which is how we got into the long form video chat at the end of the other show. We've got a YouTube channel now where you can actually watch videos.
Shorter form now. I think the American Psycho one up is about 10 minutes.
About a 10-minute revisit of American Psycho. Little visuals to go with our audio from the podcast. Anyway, I'm making it sound dull again. It's not dull. It's bloody brilliant. Check out our YouTube channel. Type Clash of the Titles into the search bar at the, at the top of the screen.
Using your search engine to find YouTube.
Right then. Monday, I sat down with a few good men, which means today, Vicky is our Memphis Belle. She heads to Tennessee talk us through the firm.
Thank you. Take
us on a journey.
They say when a man is tired of backflipping, he's tired of life. Just ask hotshot young lawyer Mitch McDear, who has his pick of law firms to work at, but chooses the one that asks impertinent questions about tonguing his wife and, are a front for Chicago bad guys who we don't see do anything wrong or bad guy-like, and you only realise how dangerous they themselves might be because one of them is Paul Sorvino. After banging an injured woman on the beach, she's either not really injured or she can't run away, and both scenarios are bad. We're into a timeless tale of man versus photocopier, where Mitch must print shit like mad while evading the FBI and the mob, and make sure his brother gets to hook up with Holly Hunter and upset his wife with whispering. Mitch's eventual plan does mean he rediscovers his true love, gymnastics, and after landing on a crash mat of cotton wool, he then uses a high bar to kick a small window in for no reason. He's then a free man, free to take off around the country, wherever this overbilling and root out this most evil, corrupt of practices. Oh no, wait, he's just being a front for the bad guys, which actually he seems perfectly happy with, meaning he could have saved himself a lot of time and not done any of this film.
Okay.
No. It's just the way I write it. Like, right. I find it. You know, I've said a million times, sincerity is a struggle for me.
Is it? Is it ever mentioned he's a gymnast, or have you just made that up?
I've made that up.
Okay,
but it is weird, isn't it?
That first flip, I'm like, did I miss a trick?
Yep.
Is this a thing?
We rule of three it because we're good writers, Robert Town. So let's jump into a crash mat just full of cotton wool. But we're not bad writers. We will set up the cotton wool. We're not just going to have it appear. That would be mad.
I mean, he more falls. He doesn't do any flips when he's going down.
No. But he's very accustomed to landing on a crash mat. But then when he's in that room,
he does stand up on it and put his feet together and put his helmet in
there. 10. And also he does get on the high bar and swing his legs into a window.
That's the bit I never realised before. Good point.
And kick an old man in.
And then becomes that sweat bat. Anyway, the first time I saw
the sweat bat. Write it down. Just need a pitch for that title. That is great. Sweat bat.
Title in search of a format that, but we'll do it. So I saw this around the same time as I saw A Few Good Men, because it's just something you did, isn't it? It's like you watched the shouty Tom Cruise.
Six months apart, I think. Yeah.
But the trouble is, I think in my personal timeline, and this is not the fault of the film, I think I saw it after I saw The Devil's Advocate, which I love very, very much. And so it doesn't really leave... the beats are quite similar. I might be able to argue.
Yeah. No, I mean, I wrote down, it would have been a good pairing for Devil's Advocate.
Yeah.
They nicked a lot from this film.
Because even Charlize Theron, she's this innocent in Devil's Advocate, but isn't she a Southern Belle as well? And Abby in this is from... And all of that. So there... In my brain, do I have the room for a slightly more nuanced take on Temptation? Because I keep hearing God is an absentee landlord and then I just want to watch that film. But anyway, that's my history. Okay. What about you?
Well, it's like you said, so you watched The Firm around the same time you watched A Few Good Men.
Yeah.
This was a first watch for me of The Firm. I actually thought I'd seen this when I put it on, but I'd actually just caught the end. So I'd turned on the TV at some point and it's the bit where Cruz has been chased by Jigsaw, and I was like, this looks great. Yeah. I'm going to stop watching this now, and I'm going to watch it from the start at some point. Then I forgot. So I watched it for the first time last week.
I don't see how that can have happened. I can't believe we're the same age.
We're not, you're older.
I saw this at the cinema with my mates.
Yep.
And weirdly, I also have a distinct memory of really needing a wee during the climax.
It's a long film.
And being in agony.
Yeah.
I just have these two memories. And I thought, does Tom Cruise make me wee?
Wow.
But it happened twice in 6 months. And it was these, I guess maybe it's just because they're long films.
Yeah.
But equally, again, I think that is what it is.
I don't think Tom Cruise does make you wee. I think it's just a long film.
Let's just put all the cards on the table. So on the one hand, it could be because they're long films. Or on the other hand, it could be because an actor spontaneously makes your bladder fill.
I'm not afraid to ask the tough question.
You are. That's what you bring to the show, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
But anyway, yeah, very much enjoyed it. I should say, I'd read the book in advance of the film coming out.
Oh, I was going to ask.
Yeah, big John Grisham fan at that time.
Yep.
You know, every time I was on holiday, what's the latest John Grisham? Watch it. Time to Kill was before this. I'd read that. Mm. I probably read Time to Kill and Firm at the same time because I'd heard Tom Cruise making a film about The Firm.
Yeah.
And then I read a couple more, and then it was diminishing returns with his books, really.
Okay. This was his peak era, yeah.
Well, this was his second
his
book,
second
I think,
book,
and it was a smash.
Book.
Yeah. Okay.
The break.
And then everyone went and read A Time to Kill, and obviously that got turned into a film.
Great.
But Pelican Brief was straight after this as well, which is another good, you know.
Yeah.
And they're just, I would never really think of reading one now, but they're very entertaining, easy reads.
I told you recently, rather than read the book you got me, which I am still struggling
You're
through.
You're not going to finish it.
I will one day.
Fine.
I will one day. But I put it down I can't even remember what it was called, The Judge or something. Like the latest John Grisham. And I'd never read a John Grisham novel, but obviously movies like this, his legacy, I was really aware of John Grisham, the author.
You read the latest John Grisham?
The latest, the most.
Why would you go back and read one of the classics?
Because I didn't know. It was at a fucking airport. It said John Grisham on the cover. I was like, oh, John Grisham, I'll buy that.
Have you got the new John Grisham?
I've read all the others.
Anyway.
And how was it?
Fucking terrible.
Right, yeah.
Oh,
bad. I was just gobsmacked that this is the guy who was like, John Grisham.
Did it have someone else's name on the title and then his name just underneath, but really small? Because that's what they do, these guys, isn't it? They sort of, James Pattinson and Patricia Cornwell, they find another author and their name goes big on it and the other author's is small and they're sort of ghostwriting them. They're churning out like 10 books a year because they're doing these collaborations. I think James Pattinson just released one with Dolly Parton.
Wow.
Same audience.
Yeah. Stephen King's got a new book out. Did you know that?
What's it called?
He's always got a new book.
I can't remember. I read a review of it.
It's very good.
I wonder
what it's about. Can't remember. So amnesia, memory loss.
It's about a secret tunnel and then it's like a magical fairy thing, but it's someone goes into this secret world.
Fairy tale, isn't it, or something?
It's called Fairy Tale.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, good. See, unlike Grisham, King still delivers.
Sometimes he does.
Revival was good a few years ago. What was the other one? One about a hitman. Can't remember. Billy something. Anyway, that was great.
Great.
King's still good. Carry on.
Well, I'll carry on. You don't need to look at Chris. I'll carry on.
Has he finished, though, his his histories with this movie?
I think so,
okay,
yeah.
He has. Yeah, carry on.
Thank you. So, as we have established, this is based on a John Grisham novel.
I told you.
You've done your bit. So, John Davis and Scott Rudin, they acquire it when it's a manuscript. So it wasn't insanely popular. And a lot of the interviews you'll read about this was like they were scared. They got scared once it started to become massive. that they were going to do a quote Bonfire of the Vanities and fuck it up, basically.
Mm. Because based on loved it. The idea came out of one of his mates coming back from an interview at a law firm. He said that I didn't really feel good about that firm. I got the impression that once you join the firm, you never leave, like it's owned by the mafia or something.
Or something.
Grisham files that away. 5 years later, bang.
Just crosses out the or something. Yeah. Got a book out of there.
Yeah, I don't want to hear any complaints about Sweatbat when that comes out, because you heard me say I'm using it.
10 years, though. 10 years later, he wrote the firm.
Okay.
Everything's an idea. Mm.
So they get a script from playwright David Rabe and the producers. They've got the script and they go and visit Tom Cruise on the set of A Few Good Men. And they offer him the, you can have this and you can direct it if you want to. And he says no, because I don't like the script.
No, because I'm not a director.
Yeah.
I've looked at my CV.
Yeah.
Check out in 40 years, I'll still not be a director.
I know, it's weird.
Do I have to direct it? Can I just be in it?
Have you heard
no.
of me?
The deal is direct and act, Tom.
Oh, and nothing. Oh, we've got to some bloke called Sidney Pollock. I don't know. Never heard
of
him.
They went to cruise after they'd gone to Jason Patrick.
Oh, yeah, that's
which
true.
Which feels
yeah.
like a step up.
Wow.
Yeah.
I guess Patrick was a big deal then.
Yeah. I just watched a Patrick movie that we're going to be doing in the near future.
Great. Mm. Okay.
You've got it coming.
Spoiler alert.
You've got it coming. Oh, have you got it coming?
What does that mean?
It's a movie you're doing of a pairing that we're doing when Chris is away.
Oh, is it? Mm. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
All right, great.
It's a hell of a performance. This is late era Patrick, and he's taking no prisoners.
Oh, my God, I'm so excited.
I think he saw this role. He was like, this is my way back in. Different kind of Patrick. Lot to unpack there, Jason Patrick.
Brilliant. All right, so, yeah, we get to Sidney Pollock. He chucks out David Rabe's script. So the script that got chucked out... There was a finale in which Mitch, I like it, takes a machine gun to court and wreaks havoc on everyone with a machine gun. But it's very dark. And Abby, the wife, she gets raped and the brother gets killed. And someone's like, no, that's too dark.
What the fuck are you talking about? Is this a real thing?
It's a script that didn't happen,
Which I wrote off. But then when you think about it, I mean, when you're dealing with the mafia, there's no reason why you couldn't have your climax involving guns.
Right.
Course,
okay,
yeah.
Sorry. I think I just went to the next level. I thought you meant he gunned down a courtroom of mafia.
No.
When you said wreaks havoc with a machine gun,
yeah.
That was my interpretation. Like, you take that, Paul Sorvino!
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I haven't read it.
It could be. We don't know, but there's certainly machine gun fire.
Yeah.
Okay, I imagine it's just an attention grabber where he fires at the ceiling. I can't see Mitch taking the gun to
him. I don't think so. Because bear in mind, in this version, Abby is raped and what's his brother called?
Ray.
Mm. Ray is killed, and Ray's a very sympathetic character, so I don't know. Like, then you get a version.
They were like, no, we want the photocopying version of this climax.
What if a gun was actually a photocopy?
But you say that, but that's kind of true. So
they call it Xeroxing.
They do, yeah. So David Rayfield, he's got a rethink. But they can't nail the ending. So what do you do when you can't nail the ending? You go to Robert Town. Robert Town.
Days of Thunder, Robert Town.
Oh, that's God, that's true. Oh, shit.
Same era.
He's not always good, is he?
Always.
Oh, so it's hit and miss. So
Robin is racing, son.
Oh, it's just still so awful.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so bad.
What are you doing, Cold Trickle?
Cold Trickle.
Pocket play.
So the challenge is, how do you get Mitch to have it all, which they were really hung up on him still being able to practice law, because that's who he is as a person. And so that's why you get this fucking snooze fest for me that's overbilling and mail fraud. Mm. But it means Mitch still gets to be the person that you believe him to be.
Because in the book, it's more about him stealing everyone's money and going on the run.
That's the thing. And so they were really, Sidney Pollack didn't, he says he didn't want this very yuppie thing where everyone gets rich and it's morally ambiguous, but he takes the money and he runs, which is not that ambiguous, but whatever. There was an idea as well. So Gene Hackman's in this as Avery Tolar, and they messed around with changing him from being a him to a her.
Meryl Streep, wasn't it?
Yeah, so they wanted a romance, which is fair enough. But Sidney Pollack says it's very hard to create romance between a husband and wife on film, and I find that really interesting because I agree with him, because you're entering a relationship that's already solid, so what do? Do you blow up that relationship? But then if you want romance, you can't have two people courting because it's too distracting from the main narrative thread. So I totally understand why you might put...
And it's a good idea. I think what he said is he wanted the law firm to seduce him literally as well as spiritually.
Yeah. Yes.
It's not a bad idea.
It's an interesting way that they sort of manifest what romance is in a marriage, like you say, a relationship. relationship that's been going for a while. Because yep. It's the scene where she's talking about how he's not spending any time with her and mm-hmm. she's bored and she's on her own. And, you know, your initial reaction to that is like, Jesus Christ, he's just started a new like law firm and all of that. I just think it's a very relatable thing where it's about apportioning the right amount of time yeah. to a relationship that you've been in for a while and your job. So I was like, this is actually a really, really good scene. Really, really on the money.
Very relatable.
What it's like to yeah. be in a long relationship and that be an issue about spending time and apportioning time.
Definitely. I totally agree with you. I think...
Not staying down the pub after you finish your podcast
oh, yes.
all night.
God. Yeah. God, yeah. nag, nag, nag!
Jesus Christ.
This again.
Put a sock in it. Love.
Yes, I've been out. Anyway, so...
It's work!
yeah, I've been at work.
Oh, the number of important decisions we've made in the pub.
You like the money, don't you? You like the fancy things I buy you.
I had to go. We had to have a meeting about a potential, fuck it, live show.
A guest live show pairing. What else have we got?
Chris is not very well, so we had to talk through the number of issues you've had that we've had to talk through in the pub after a show. What's wrong with me? Sometimes I come in after a show and she's like, how's Chris doing? No.
Yeah, more tests.
We just don't know. It's touch and go.
Bloody hell. You're killing me off.
If Nancy ever looks at you sort of like,
you're killing me off in the third season.
But anyway, the people that love the book are not happy about that. Avery remains a dude. So you get Gene Hackman. Let's do what I will call casting intrigue, which I find this interesting because I like agent bullshit and agent back and forth. Gene Hackman is in it. Gene Hackman is very good in it. Gene Hackman is not on the poster title thing. Name is not above the thing. Because Tom Cruise will not have that in his contract. If he's in a movie, it's only his name above the image thing. So Gene Hackman's agents were like, you do not go second billing. We'll just take it all off because it sets a terrible precedent in this town. And I find that sort of thing fun. Mm. I don't know what you think.
Yeah, they're making him look like a hack man.
Oh, God. Yeah, I think that's all I've got.
Great.
Yeah.
That's enough.
Let's crack on then, shall we? Let's talk about this film. All right, so Tom Cruise is Mitch McDear. He's the best hotshot lawyer there is after being in A Few Good Men as the best yeah. shot lawyer.
Does
there
it
is.
Not remind you the start of this? To me, I was watching going, it is literally the polar opposite of the start of Cocktail. It's the same thing, except where in Cocktail, no one wants him, and this, everyone wants him.
Yeah. Good point. Yep. Good point. Interviewing montage.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
Interviewing montage.
Yeah.
So no one asks him. He's so good that he's going for all these interviews, and no one asks him a single law-oriented question in all those job interviews. Mm. They're not like, but as a for instance.
Well, they've got his score, though, haven't they? They've already been told yep. that he's going to finish in the top 5% or something.
So what they do ask him about, and correct me if I'm wrong, is oral sex. Have I overshot it there? So he goes to Bendini, Lambert and Locke
uh-huh.
and they say, are you ever tongue-tied? And he's like, sometimes with my wife. And he's being sweet. And one of them goes, do you want to tell me about the time you were tongue-tied with your wife? And I was like, that's gross.
New I'm all in. Bloody hell.
Are you sure?
He absolutely is not talking about a blowjob.
No, he's not. No, cunnilingus, other way.
No.
Are you sure?
Yes.
I don't know, man. I think you should watch it.
You do know. You do. Just sit for a moment with it. Have a think. Come on.
I'm just let's just do the scene.
Hey, do you want to tell me about the last time you were tongue-tied with your wife?
No,
it's not that moment.
Oh, I don't know.
I'm with Al.
It's okay. I didn't.
I mean, maybe I need to watch the scene again, but I didn't immediately think cunnilingus.
I did. Mm-mm. Because oral sex is
that's
up
clear.
But also because I kind of forgot about it and I'm jumping a little bit and we'll come back to it properly. The security guy later is like, we've got you doing all sorts with that lady on the beach. Bit of oral. He doesn't say bit of oral. He does say oral sex. I was like, someone is fixated.
Yes, but this is all about the fact that they're a family here.
Yeah.
And that it's all about having good values.
Yeah.
And so why does he say
with a twinkle in his eye?
They're not going to crack a cunnilingus reference if they're presenting themselves
He's asking him as a serious question. He wants him to tell him to describe a time when you were
All right, let's say that. Let's say that. Because then he says, I hope you don't think as obtrusive. And if I was Tom Cruise, I'd say, well, I do actually. That's really personal.
Yeah, you just asked me about cunnilingus.
What?
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 What do you mean?
Sorry, you've lost the job. You've lost the job.
What she really likes is like, no.
What the fuck are you doing?
See, I was going to do that and I thought, no.
Yeah.
I was thinking, Kingpin. You went for it.
Yeah, I can't help myself.
That's too fast. Anyway, let's meet the... That took you a minute.
You got to change speed. Oh my God, we're not having a conversation. But this get on with the next bit. We're talking about wholesome law. You do have to change speed, though. Carry on, Chris.
This is the only hope.
Yeah, you're right.
Exactly. Too fast. I was just doing an example of a portion of the act. I wasn't doing the whole thing
at
that speed.
You win. I can't talk about it anymore. I'm
great.
Going on very red. All right, fine. Let's meet the lovely wife. So she's a school teacher because, of course, she is, because it's the 90s and she has to be an innocent kind of like nothing woman. And also, I do think it's because they don't have kids. And in the film language, an audience would be like, burn that witch, why she not got kids? So she likes kids. They just don't have them right now.
Right.
I think is what's going on there.
Yeah, she loves them. She teaches them.
She has... So, you know, we set up that Mitch and Abby are a lovely couple and he's got a Chinese takeaway, which weirdly we discussed on Fantastic Four, which is movie visual language for you're either working hard or we just really like each other or both.
Yep.
So what's your favourite Chinese takeaway scene? I'll tell you mine. It's Ghostbusters. There you go.
I don't know.
Okay, just have Ghostbusters.
You need to...
It's probably one of the greatest scenes in Josh Trank's Fantastic Four.
Yeah, they all just sit around and eat a bit of sweet and
because
sour.
They're busy being scientists.
They say that in Avengers, time. Though, don't they, with the shawarma?
Shawarma, yeah.
Was that an homage to that Fantastic Four scene?
I believe so, yeah. Yeah.
Anything in Big Trouble in Little China?
Oh, yeah, of course. Anyway, so we are off to Memphis to do some lawyering and some backflips. Okay, so I'm sure you've got some opinions about the backflips, but...
It's a big shout. She's...
Of all the ways to show someone who's lost his love of life, have him do a backflip and then have him not do a backflip.
Yeah.
Is mad.
When he does the flips first time around, they're forward flips anyway, they're not backflips.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sorry.
They're just flips.
Right.
Her reaction suggests that she's sort of like, oh, he's doing it again. It suggests that he does this all the time.
Yeah. He's with strangers, though. He's on the first night out with his new lawyer friends. If you've just got a job at a big firm, the best job you've ever had at a great firm, who are all very like, hello, you don't suddenly go... Oh, watch this, guys!
It makes you seem really drunk. I don't know.
It's just like it makes you seem insane.
Yeah.
I don't think he pays the kid at the end of it.
No, he doesn't.
That's your payment, kid.
I wouldn't want him touching my hands afterwards because...
Been on the floor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's... I mean, that floor is going to be covered in
a
puke.
A small child flipping
flips
down the street is not so much a public health and safety issue because the child is small. Tom Cruise flipping at you down the pavement. What if you get in his way? He's going to kick you in the head. Yeah.
He doesn't check. He doesn't look around.
Just goes for it. Cocky.
Yeah, I mean, he's not a health and safety lawyer.
Clearly.
Yeah. There's two things here. First of all, isn't it nice that it's set in Memphis? You don't see Memphis on screen.
I do like that. And I like the fact that a lot of people are like, oh, you haven't gone to New York. He's like, no, this is where it's at. It's good. Yeah,
it's
great.
It's nice. It's just nice seeing a different city. And they actually shot it in Memphis. I mean, I know it's all tax cuts and breaks and whatever. Sure. And that's why everything's shot in Georgia at the moment, in Atlanta. But I like seeing Memphis. There's a line that Lamar says here. I don't know if you're going to cover it. But he says he's talking about Alice Krauss. And I'm saying this here because I want to come back to it later. Mm. But he talks about Alice Krauss walking around the office in 4-inch heels at affirmative action on stilts. Mm.
Yeah. Yes.
So he sort of says this in a funny way. Lamar, at this point in the movie, knows Alice Krauss is dead.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because Lamar later on...
Because he looks all upset about
He looks all upset. He's been wet by sprinklers and not moving, which is your classic, he's haunted.
but he's having to play the charade here. So he's having to show Mitch why they got rid of this woman, why this woman is no longer with the company. Because she was a problem. Yeah. She wasn't good enough. She was only part of the company because she was a woman. It was affirmative action.
Right.
She was going around in high heels. And the implication there is that she wasn't up to the job and therefore we got rid of her. We definitely didn't kill her. Mitch, we did not kill her.
So, okay, that's interesting then. So you're saying Lamar knows about all this. Lamar knows about the deaths.
Everyone knows.
Everyone knows that the company is a front for the mafia, but not everyone knows that they murder lawyers who try and leave.
Okay, so maybe Lamar doesn't know.
Everyone knows because after that certain period of time, you find out. They get you in for the first 2 years and then bang, they drop the bomb on you. This is what's really happening.
So why?
And if you leave, you're dead. And so Mitch wouldn't find out about anything happening for the next few months, but he obviously gets a sniff early and figures it out.
So you're saying Lamar knows she's dead. He's playing a part here. He definitely knows that they kill people. So that scene in the garden when he's being wet by the sprinkler, that's a performance.
No, he's fucking broken. He's terrified because he's stuck in this situation where he's losing his mind because there's nothing he can do. If he says anything or doesn't, he's going to get killed. He's having a breakdown.
Yes. Right. Okay.
That's why.
Okay, so he's just that weird thing to him about his tuition fee.
He probably had a breakdown about Alice Krauss, but now he's over that, so he can be flippant about her. But because these are the latest murders, it's reminded him of his position, and that's why for these guys he's haunted, or he's just a misogynist.
Yeah. And I think there's been a bit of time gap, hasn't there, between Alice's death, and so maybe he's like, it's happening again, and whatever else.
Back into it. Got you.
Okay.
Well, let's have a small break, shall we?
After that, yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
All right, so Gene Hackman is Avery Tolar. I like that Avery and Mitch came from poverty, and I love the reveal later that it's saved later that Mitch's brother Ray is in prison. Mm-hmm. That's all good.
I just think all the stuff with Avery here is just really good. The fact that he orders the drink. Oh, and yes. You're not really reading too much into it, but then you see at the end, oh, he's an alcoholic because he's the same as Lamar. He's he's trapped.
Yeah.
A Bombay martini with three olives sounded yum. Delicious. Right?
And then he says he joined he became a lawyer because he wants hot women. Yeah. And it seems funny at the time, but then we realise, no, that's his weakness and he's a womanizer and he's pathetic. And it's just, I love that it's all dropped in here and you're not really seeing it until the performance brings it
to
the fore.
They tell you everything, but your reading of it changes over the course.
Because you're thinking about Mitch and not Avery.
Yeah. I think Ray's very good. I think David Strathairn is very good. But I think they wimped out on the manslaughter charge. I think Ray should have gone to prison for something bad.
Really?
Yeah, of course. It's just meatier, isn't it?
He's killed someone, though.
Yeah, but they over-explain it. He was a boxer. And it's all mitigating circumstances.
But you've got to make him sympathetic.
Mickey's saying, that he shouldn't be sympathetic. Mickey's sympathetic. Actual point.
Really? You can still write it.
Because it makes it more interesting.
Mm. You can still do it. It makes it
more morally questionable.
I think if you've got a character whose primary function is to be sympathetic, that you want to see free at the end, and they have done a murder.
We don't have to do a murder unprovoked.
We don't have to want to see him free.
Okay, give me an example of what just so I can understand it. Because I think beyond this, you enter a murky territory where a lot of the audience are going to go, no, he did a murder.
No, why don't you just have him do something that everybody thinks is bad,
like
that isn't a murder?
A robbery.
Anything, a robbery, a drug-related something.
I put all of those below, like, manslaughter, because he still killed someone. I think
yes, but they don't just say manslaughter, they then mitigate it with
he threw one punch, and if he hadn't been a boxer, he wouldn't have gone to prison.
It's almost like it was an accident. The guy fell on his fist is basically how Mitch pitches
they
it.
They don't say, we don't even get, he got angry and lost his temper and he shouldn't have done. He was essentially in the wrong place at the wrong time.
I'm with you. It's too easy. Yep. It's too easy.
Oh, we love that about Nicolas Cage and Con Air. We love it about Ray here.
Yes, that's true.
Exactly. No, you weren't moaning about that. He's a killing machine. That's not his fault.
But this isn't Ray's film. This is Mitch's film, and this is all to get Mitch what he wants. And I think you can make it a bit more complicated. So we're questioning. It's too easy for Mitch.
Yes. So then my heart sunk a bit, because when I'm trying to understand what Avery does for a living, I'm like, okay, cool, we're in tax avoidance and money laundering, which in of itself can be quite dull. So obviously Ozark did a really good job of it. And there's that scene in Scarface where we're talking about tax, but it is electrifying. And that's, I sometimes feel with this is all of the detail about tax avoidance and money laundering, but none of the fun. So until we're in the Cayman Islands, it's just Gene Hackman going, this is how you clean money. And it's like, okay, but I want to see the reward of that. I want to see the fun of that. Like, I want to see bad guys doing bad things. I don't want to see European hitman or Nordic hitman, whatever they call him, doing bad things on behalf of the mob. I would like to see the mob do those things. So I like tax avoidance as a thing, but I was like, oh, where's the sort of meat of that, like, all I'm hearing is the explanation of it. So anyway, if Mitch wasn't sure what was going on, then he goes to the Caymans, and then he definitely meets a gangster 100%, and then he cheats on Abby more or less immediately. And I do understand the writing, and I do think the writing is fine, which is like, what would tempt him? Because his relationship is pretty solid, and they're talking about having naked eggs together, which is gross, and something that writers do to be like, this couple are still having sex, and so they must be fine, even though it'd be knottier and more complicated if they kind of weren't. But anyway, what would tempt Mitch is a woman who can talk to him on his level about this racism with himself to get more and more stuff and money, and you'll never be safe because you'll never be rich enough. And that's because Abby is rich. And so he sees in this woman something that his wife doesn't offer. But, you know, I mean, it just comes really quickly that he just totally cheats on his wife. I don't even care about that sort of thing.
Did you? I thought this needs to be longer, this film, when I was watching it, and I thought.
So he did. You immediately knew this was a setup by the firm, though.
He
didn't
should
you?
Have known. She's like, I've sprained my ankle. Then she's like, I'm going to mount you. It's unbelievable. That would hurt. She's like, I've forgotten I sprained my ankle. But anyway. That's the other thing. So then we do get a bit bogged down in tax. I mean, later on in the film, we actually go to a tax seminar, and I find that hard because it's like, why am I in a tax seminar when I could be anywhere? But anyway, the little shot in the arm for the film is Gary Busey and Holly Hunter as these PIs. Like, they're God, they're so good.
Yeah.
They are so good.
Boosie is just...
unreal.
I mean, I think Chris mentioned on Monday how stacked the cast is of A Few Good Men. I mean, this arguably yeah. is even better. Ed Harris, yeah. Gary Boosie.
And it's one of those where they obviously gave Boosie the script and said, just do...
Riff.
Do
Gary Boosie. Mm. And, yeah. he absolutely delivers.
Yeah.
And he's so good.
And then we get the greatest hitman double act in history, wandering Jigsaw and Hank from Breaking Bad.
As Nordic and Squat.
Nordic and Squat, yeah. I'm sad that it's... Why is Nordic our bad guy? Why is it not a Chicagoan mobster? Mm. That would tie the bads together kind of thing.
Good
but
point.
Ultimately, it's very sad to see Gary Busey get killed, because I understand yes. that he's got to die, but it would be cool if we just have one more scene, because he's so brilliant.
Bit more Busey. Yeah. Be more Boosie.
Does a lot. He does a lot with a little there, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Also, Wilford Brimley should get a shout
He's
out.
He's really good. Oh. He's so good.
Well, he was in a lot of kids shows and family shows in America, so that's where anyone watching it there would know him from. We obviously just knew him from Cocoon, really.
I knew him from The Thing.
And The Thing.
The Thing.
No, I didn't. When I was a little kid, I hadn't seen The Thing yet.
Wilford Brimley who gets his arms bitten off in The Thing, which is like the scene that I could never forget.
Sure, but a lot of young people wouldn't have seen The Thing at that
point.
Yeah,
sure.
When I was watching it. And so he was just this lovable old man, and he'd never really been cast as someone, or I'd never seen him as anyone evil.
Mm. Yeah.
And so that was an extra shock to the system that the sweet man from Cocoon was...
He's so sinister.
He's really good.
He is absolutely fantastic in this. I'll talk about him later, but what he does with that character, you absolutely know who that person yeah. is. Devonshire. He's nasty.
So the FBI, this is just the plot, that they want Mitch as their inside man, and they're like, you are now the sole legal representation of the Moralto crime family. And he's like, uh-oh. I love this scene, the setup. I love the fact that they get to the Lincoln Memorial, and then a war vet's like, take this leaflet, brother, go over there. Mm. And then he goes over there, and then Ed Harris is like, go over there. Mm. And it's like, after all, I was like, wow, cool, I'm seeing some espionage. But then after all that, you are sat on a bench in broad daylight. So it's like, if someone was following you, oh no, you are just sitting on a bench with the director of the FBI, whatever it is. Like,
yeah.
Why all the misdirection to go and sit in broad fucking
daylight? Holly Hunter's better at this later in the film.
Yeah, she is. I just thought that, oh, they're going to put him in a van and then he's going to go somewhere and then he's lost his tail. Just broad daylight, having a massive chat.
But that line that he does, you know, your life as you know it is over. Mm. I think it's a great moment.
Great
it's line. A great yeah. line, and it really sort of... It just like it's a guy who knows, saying you have no way out. You're fucked.
Yeah.
From hearing you're going into witness protection if you help us, or you're going to die or go to jail for
yeah.
the rest
and it,
of your
it hammers
life.
Home, and so that's I think that's you know why we're seeing Lamar in the state that he's in, because Lamar is all too aware of this.
Yeah, and also it's good because initially because the interview scenes are done in montage, and then he's like, look to Abby, look on this piece of paper, look what they offered me, and you could be thinking, okay, so you're greedy then, are you? Like, why do you not want to go and work for a law firm that offered you actually just 20% less, that's all you're getting more. But it's then drip fed that he comes from a trailer park and he's got this big need to prove himself. So you do, when they say to him your life is over, you do feel sorry for him, even though he could have had an easier life if he'd just done
he could have had seats at the Lakers.
Yes.
I can't believe you turned that down.
But when he does take the job as well, yes, it's the highest paying job, but also they seem like the most wholesome law firm he's been approached by,
which his wife does not like. So he's twisting her arm to do it.
They tell him, we're a family.
Mm.
That's loaded when you realise what they're all about
yeah,
later.
Yeah. Mm. One of my favourite scenes. Is it actually my favourite scene? I'm just double checking. No. We need to tell Abby what's going on.
Well, the first thing he does, though, is he goes into his office and tells them he's speaking to the FBI, which is, I like that when a character does something I'm not expecting.
Mm. Yeah.
You don't expect Mitch to do that.
It confused me a little bit.
Sure.
Because the dialogue, I lost the thread, where he's like, well, about the secret files.
Sure, it's not very well explained. So he's telling them half the truth,
yes,
isn't he?
Which
yes.
I got,
yeah,
because I understood what the beat was. But if I didn't know that from a script perspective,
yeah,
I'd be like, what, have you told him, have you not told them?
Agreed. But then, obviously, then he does what you would have expected to do first, which is go and speak to his wife.
He goes to speak to his wife.
Good
Let's
face
tell
acting.
Her everything.
Good face
it's
acting.
Phenomenal. The trouble is, if you're an actor and you're a writer, you want to write that because the firm is listening, so we've got to whisper it. So you've got an actor, you're saying to her, you just go for it. And it's a fun thing to write because it's the opposite of shouting, whatever. But it's like you couldn't possibly go outside. Oh, no, wait, you have just gone outside, actually, to have a massive chat. So you've undercut yourself because he comes in. I'm going to tell you everything. Whisper, whisper, whisper. And she's like, fuck you. And then they have a massive chat outside. So have the massive chat outside. Like, I don't, you're looking at your script and an inner voice has got to be shouting, why not just do the whole thing outside? There has to be a reason, no?
Yeah.
Well, they only go outside so that we can see him run, don't they?
Of course.
So
Tom Cruise runs.
Yeah. So anyway, he's going to cooperate and this fucking printer won't cooperate. And then Wilford Brimley's like, we've got photos of you doing beach sex. So he's in a bit of a pickle there.
Not just screwing, intimate acts.
Oral sex!
No.
That's what he says!
He says, oral and whatnot.
There you go.
Oral and whatnot.
Oral and whatnot.
What's the whatnot?
Is that whatnot? Well, it's
Wait, let's just tick it off. Full sex, oral, whatnot.
It's like it's like the Mr. Blonde ear scene in Reservoir Dogs. It's
is
like,
it?
Well, yeah, because it suggests like your mind does like what not?
What
what's,
not?
What's what not?
I actually don't know what not is, so it's
probably, you know, yeah, that one. Yep, I'm not saying it, so that's just that.
What
exactly?
What not? Yep.
Yeah. Oh,
of course,
God.
That's whatnot. That is
it
whatnot.
It is, yeah, no, fair enough.
Anyone ever asks you to do whatnot, that's
say
it.
No. okay, so he has to tell Abby the truth. And I do like this scene. Apparently, this isn't in the book. He doesn't tell her that he has cheated on her.
No.
But I like it because he's not going to lie to her. So you're rooting for them as a couple. But then he does lie because she's like, why have you told me this? And he says, I'm telling you because I can't bear for you not to know.
This is I wrote this down. It's in my bit. This is insane.
Yeah.
This is insane that the whole thing is like he's telling her the truth,
yeah.
And he doesn't want to be a liar, and he couldn't. He actually says, I could not live with myself,
yep,
if you didn't know, if I didn't tell you. And then she goes, why have you told me now? And he goes, for that reason, because yeah, you had to know. And it's like he lies,
yeah,
in the moment that we're meant to be like, okay, good, like he's doing the right thing, and then he's not.
It's really bad because it's photos is the reason. I got caught, so I'm telling you now. But
she never finds out about that for the rest of the movie.
No.
She thinks he's told her that he was cheating. He would have taken that to the grave if there weren't photos.
That's
if he
thing.
Wasn't threatened, yeah, he would never
true.
Have fucking told her.
And then they try and make it okay, which I understand. And she's like, oh, how could I have loved you since before we met or whatever? Because he's like, well, it was a setup, so kind of, my hands were tied sort of thing. Couldn't help it. Fell on her sort of thing. And it's like, she's like, well, that's absolutely fine. And I understand that the infidelity should be forgiven because they're a good couple. But for him, it's really rushed when they're like, oh, it was definitely a setup. And she's like, that's cool then. Anyway, so Mitch has got a plan. So handily, this firm have been overbilling, so he's going to get them on that instead. Even though it's his first job, he still really wants to be a lawyer, even though it's not going very well, I would say, but he's still got some hopes for it. And then Abby has to sort of, I get it, but I'm not comfortable with it. So she essentially has to sell herself to get some boxes for a man she is ostensibly quite pissed off with. So she's got to offer herself up to old dude Gene Hackman. And I get why
pretend to offer herself up.
Oh yes, yeah, so this is a segment of the film that is sponsored by Hyatt Regency Hotels and Havana Club Rum.
You do your thing.
It's the bit where it's like an advert in the middle of a film where he picks up the a glass of Havana Club rum, which has no ice and is straight rum, and she's like,
yeah,
this is nice. Isn't it? It's like cognac.
It blows my mind.
Unbelievable.
It's so bad.
I think it's something this film does well that A Few Good Men doesn't do so well. In the book, she doesn't really do anything. Whereas here, they've given her a job.
Yes.
She's quite an integral part of the plot. And it's something she comes up with because Mitch obviously doesn't know that she's doing this because the plan is for Holly Hunter's character to go in his room when he's scuba diving. She's the one that hears he's not scuba diving. So she's got to get involved now. And she's not going there to offer us to have sex with him. She's going there to drug him,
yes,
and do what she's got to do.
I like that she gets to do some stuff. I just think, especially with the music, it's turned into an actual caper. She is a mild-mannered school teacher and now she's drugged an old man and taken all her clothes off. And it's like, okay. I can't remember the line. I think the writers are trying to say to me that her almost shagging Avery is part of her revenge on Mitch for shagging someone else. So it evens the score. but Mitch got to shag someone very beautiful, and basically she's got Gene Hackman. No shade on Gene Hackman, obviously, but
it sounds like shade on Gene Hackman. No. She got Gene Hackman.
No, I just think that doesn't settle the score.
I didn't see that at all, but...
I agree.
Because he says it to her. Yeah, he says, you're here because
he's
of him.
Like, what? Like, doesn't he... When he finds out about it, he's not happy because he thinks she's cheated on him, which, naughty, because, you know, it does even the score.
Okay. So anyway, talking about the cape element...
Not whatnot, just regular. Just regular.
That's the thing, because then if it was whatnot as well, you'd always be one ahead. Yep. And then that's not a way to live.
Exactly. Exactly. God, what have I got to do tonight just to get back to parity?
Just to get even.
Whatnot again.
So I don't like this at all. And if this is Robert Towne's fault, my heart is officially broken, because a lot of the plot now rests on a sheet from a fax machine that is conveniently unseen. And you've got to do better than that.
I've got six examples coming up now of terrible contrivances. We don't have to go into all of them, but that's just one of so many.
Yeah.
That
in this film.
Yeah. That all it turns into a bit of a disaster, I think, now.
Yeah.
In terms of just me shaking my head.
I just think if you're, not to put too much on Robert Towne, but if you are Robert Towne, and if this might not be on him, but Wilford Brimley's done a really good job of it. Well, you've written a good character there, because the security guy is great. So it has to be something in his character that means he doesn't look at the facts. That's all it is. Yep. It's more work, obviously. He can't just blow off the thing and then remain under a tray or whatever it is.
Yeah, so it's under the fax machine.
Yeah, until it's not.
Because it's exactly the right time. The fax, the photocopier runs out of paper just when the film needs it to, and that's how it gets found. So those are two terrible contrivances.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Not compared to a truck of feathers underneath a window.
It's cotton wool. It's cotton wool. Someone says, move your truck of cotton. I swear to God. So, yeah.
And then also, the other thing that's a real issue, I think, is when he knows he's in danger and when he should be going to ground, he goes to a place so public where he'll be seen by so many people, it's insane. And then, just so happens, the mother of one of the wives is there in the same place and sees him at the same time. And that's how they can track him down there. So you've got to come with... I get that with a film about photocopying, we've got to go some interesting places
and outside,
visually.
Yeah, of course.
But you've got to come up with something better than that.
And also, when you're writing it, would you not be like, oh, I can't believe I've just done this? Kay is there also by coincidence. And she, you're like,
she's on the phone at the time when she sees
you'll
you.
You'll never guess who I've just seen, the very man that you're looking for. You've got to just... Are you on? I know. I rag on people like that because it's like, you're so good and you can do so much better. And I don't see how this is acceptable. It just annoys me.
I like this stuff about paddle steamers, though.
It's really interesting.
Very interesting. Hundreds of them.
She's the woman doing the tour. Does she really work for a paddle steam tour guide? Because she's very good.
She's very good. I mean, I was like, oh, I'd like to know more about the shallow Mississippi and why the hulls had to be designed that way. It's fascinating. And it also made me want to rewatch Maverick with Mel Gibson.
Okay. Yep. You saying that when you saw Nordic Man running after Tom Cruise and you're like, this looks awesome, is one of the silliest things. A man running after a monorail looks stupid.
I love that shot where the monorail...
Jigsaw keeps up with the monorail.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
That's not possible. I know Jigsaw's clever and fast, but he was in Mississippi Burning.
But he really does keep up for it in real... That's a real monorail, and he's really keeping up with
No, because that's at the start of the monorail's journey. We then come to the end of its journey, and he's there.
The monorail doesn't change speed.
A human
being does change speed after a few seconds of running.
Over the mile.
Have you seen how fit he is?
After 10 seconds of keeping up with a monorail, the human body starts to change. I've tried it.
So I suppose one of the other contrivances, even though you said you didn't want to mention them all, is...
How many monorails have you chased?
You've never been to Disney, have you? I'm all over the place there. That's the best ride there.
You ain't seen me at Disney. You wait until we go to Disney. Watch me.
One
you
bad
won't
guy
see me for dust.
Accidentally go. Kills another bad guy. That's stupid.
Very stupid.
Tom Cruise is now the sweaty bat scene, and then he beats the old dude with the briefcase. Anyway, it doesn't matter. All of that section is very silly, but it would be good. It's very good when we do get Paul Sorvino, obviously.
I'd forgotten he was in this one.
The problem, obviously, being that you're like, oh, Paul is here, great. So we've got a gangster, and you just remember all that other gangster stuff from all the other movies, and then you go, you must be bad. bad because you were bad in Goodfellas.
The other guy
who was actually
goodie.
Quite nice.
He was the goodie in Goodfellas.
You don't deal in drugs. Yeah,
he was the goodie bag.
Yeah, Joe Vitarello, the other guy who's with him, also definitely has played mafioso at some point.
Yeah.
I honestly, because I was like, please tell me they were both in Goodfellas, because it would be great if they're just Goodfellas turned up.
Yeah, to sort it out.
Just a weird crossover movie. It's a shared universe.
That would be brilliant. So the scene, I think the scene works because Tom Cruise is very good and you're projecting onto Paul Sorvino, but there's this big sweaty explanation of how he's going to pull all this stuff together. Tom Cruise has figured it out. Mitch is going to be okay. And he claims that he's been dealing with the FBI about the overbilling. And so if the mafia give him those files, they'll be fine because his attorney-client privilege, which is protected by the fact that we know this, but they don't know this, that he's not actually going to grass up the mafia and lose his job and go to prison, means that any information he's got about them is safe because he will always be their attorney and everything will be fine. So they kind of think about it and then they're like, oh, you got us, kid. The thing is, he's saying, Mitch, all the senior partners are going to prison now because of this overbilling thing. So if you're the Moraltos, I think you're still annoyed because you need them to wash your money. And Ed Harris is very, or someone says really quickly, oh, there's loads of people that will do that. Mm. But if you're the mafia, you want good people. You want discreet people. You don't just want to tender out a contract for money laundering. So I think you're still pissed off enough to kill Mitch in that moment.
Yeah, because he seems to suggest as well he'll continue being their lawyer.
100%, that's what he
says. So does he expect to walk back into an empty building and go, this is all mine now. I'm the last lawyer standing. Yeah. Everyone else has gone to prison. Then he buggers off to Boston at the end.
Yeah.
He's like, find me if you can.
That's the thing. So I don't really get it, if I'm honest. Like, there's a scene where he's talking to Ed Harris. He's like, I'll go wherever it's needed, kind of thing. He's like, you're like a superhero now. You're going to go and find overbilling.
He's like the littlest hobo, the dog. He just turns up wherever he's needed for the rest of the...
Well, they did a TV sequel that was... You know, Mitch 10 years later, Josh Lucas played him.
Oh, yeah,
of course. With the firm. Yeah. And Ray's in it, and it's, yeah.
And also overbilling, someone's like, everybody does it, but it is illegal, and once you put it in the post, it becomes mail fraud and stuff like that. Are the FBI not a bit like, this feels a bit more like the local police kind of thing? Like the FBI?
No, it always comes back to that's how they got Capone, isn't it?
Oh, yeah,
for tax.
Because
I write it down, they bring it up because they're so aware that we're doing also we're doing the Capone thing where they never got Capone for any crime he committed beyond tax.
Yeah, that's true.
But then when they're having that conversation, and I think Ed Harris asks him, you know, how did you come up with this? And he said, because mail fraud was on the bar exam and they made me study like hell. Nice, fun little line.
Little button,
like it's their own fault, but he didn't. Mr. Mulholland told him this.
Exactly.
When they sat down, this great legal mind told him that this is what's going on here. So he didn't come up with it himself.
Yep. Amazing.
Yeah. And that actor is the bloke who served the grits in My Cousin Vinny, another great courtroom drama.
Brilliant. Yeah.
So Abby's back because of course she is, because we have to resolve that. So I don't know about this speech. She's like, how could I be mad? I've loved you before I knew you. And I loved you before I even knew you. It's a very sweet, romantic thing to say. But she can still be mad, and it seems more like a real relationship. She's rather like, you are 100% forgiven. Let's not worry about it.
No, they could have fun with that moment.
Yeah.
Where he's got to, you know, we're not even close to being even. But, you know, you can figure it out.
Yeah, I never even got off with Gene Hackman, so we are nowhere near.
And it's Gene Hackman. No high five. Okay.
And then, I think he's off to expose corruption everywhere, but he's actually going back to Boston.
Yeah.
A very small, unknown law firm with a lot of potential.
Yeah. But that line, what's in Boston? We are. Please, spare me.
It feels like they couldn't figure out quite how to end it.
Well, you end it with us seeing bloody Hal Holbrook marched off by the feds. I want to see these guys.
That's true, yeah.
These guys who are like the main villains. Yes. We never see them get their comeuppance. We never see them go, I can't believe this is happening to me.
That's such a good point, Alex.
I forgot to say, Avery dies. I forgot to mention that. So he gets his... And he redeems himself
Chris was just saying I made a really good point. And you,
oh, sorry, I've got to say, no.
It doesn't happen very often, so I just wanted to bask in it. And then you were like... Avery's dead.
Sorry. I'm genuinely
go back.
Sorry.
We can still do it.
Let's cut it out. Cut it out.
There's still time.
Rewind.
God!
It wasn't that good.
I've actually forgotten
He's
it.
He's back now.
No.
He's back. We lost a moment.
About the bad guys. Look, I'm trying to make up for it. But see the bad guys go off in cuffs and...
Well, because like we did in A Few Good Men, it's very satisfying watching that happen, isn't it?
It's a really good point, Vicky.
That's
see,
better.
See how nice that was?
Instead of,
I missed that.
Instead of seeing...
It'll never happen again.
Them carted away, we get two people who've just met going away to have sex on a boat.
I know, I was annoyed by that. Holly Hunter is incredible, but I do think...
She's great in it. He's great. She got nominated for an Oscar
yeah,
for this film.
She's amazing.
He's fantastic in it. It's just funny. They're like, all right, we'll put these two together.
But also with the government's money as well. So it's like, maybe that's why they do the manslaughter thing, because ultimately Mitch has stolen almost $1 million from taxpayers and given it to his convict brother so that he can fuck off with Holly Hunter. That's a lot to swallow, I think. Like, I am surprised that Mitch steals money from the government. He just does.
Does he?
Yeah, because he's asking for this $750,000, whatever it is, blah, blah, blah. Put $750,000 in this account. And Ed Harris is like, okay then, which I don't believe they're paying him.
They're paying him for his work.
Yeah, I know, but he should give it back. It's taxpayers' money. I'm not cool with it. But I want Holly Hunter to have a nice life, so I don't know.
And you know that those two are going to, even though, you know, there's no scenes between them before this, you know they're going to have a nice time together.
Oh my God, yeah. Of course they are. They are so well suited.
They are great. They're going to be getting up to all sorts of whatnot.
They will be 100% whatnoting all over that
they're
boat.
They're going to be whatnoting on the beach, whatnoting in the sea.
That's how good they are. They get one look and he's like, hey, sweetheart. And you're like, definitely. Yeah. Anyway, that's us done.
All right.
We shall do the bits now.
Okay, so, I'm gonna forewarn you. I've gone quite big on the bits today because I think there's a few bits to talk about in the bits.
Okay, you mean in terms of length?
Yeah, I'll try and keep it briefer, but there you go.
Well, let's just get it over with then. What's your best scene?
So thrilling, the end of the pod, when we just have to get it over with.
Well, you've just done a preamble where you said you're going to go on for ages.
Yeah, you set expectations.
My best scene. It is the scene where Cruz meets the Moraltos in the hotel suite and explains all this stuff about the tax fraud and everything. I just love the way that Paul Savino keeps piping up and Joe Vitarello keeps going, hang on,
yeah,
and makes him listen because he's actually getting warmed up to Cruz's idea. I like that. I do really love the scene between between Abby and Avery at the club when they're sitting at the table having the chat, and sort of you get to really finally understand that Avery is a broken man.
Yeah. Mm.
And Hackman is brilliant in that scene. The only reason I haven't picked it is because Havana rum, it tastes like cognac.
Yeah, it's mad. Mm. I fancy a brandy.
Because
I was thinking about a sidecar. That's what happened.
You are brandy.
Do you like brandy, Chris?
I want brandy.
Tom Cruise kicking the shit out of Cocoon.
No.
It was such a strange image at the time when I was a kid watching it, and it sort of stuck with me. The Firm is the film where Tom Cruise kicks Wilford Brimley to death. Yeah. Nearly to death.
Nearly. He's breathing.
Yeah.
My favourite scene is Tom Cruise and Paul Savino in the hotel room. I tell you what would have been awesome, though, if, spoiler alert, they did just killed him on the spot.
Can't say that.
It's a really old film. It's an old film.
We have to cut it out. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Unbelievable.
I just got the thing cut out from the first episode.
Yeah.
From Monday.
Oh, did you?
Oh, I've said it again.
Idiot.
All right, we'll cut that bit out. Anyway, yeah.
So it's just that the whole section is just going to be beep, beep, beep. Fine. You can't keep telling people the end of...
Oh, we got to beep it again. Stop saying it. Stop spoiling films.
Stop getting movies spoiled. Right.
Your most valuable whatever, Chris.
So, two people here, but I'm going to pick one. John Grisham. I feel like his books got progressively worse. I've said that. I didn't need to say that again. These early novels brought me a lot of pleasure on holidays when I was a kid. So thank you, Mr. Grisham. But I'm going for Gene Hackman. I think he's amazing in this film. I think his scenes with Abby, as you said, you know,
the reveal.
Yeah, it's just the way he reveals himself, like peeling an onion. He's just awesome. And he's pathos personified. And I think it's one of his best performances.
Mm-hmm. And you?
So this is where I've gone a bit long. Chris had two. I've got three because I'm picking an actor, and I honestly think nearly every actor brings their A game in this film. Everyone in the roles is amazing. So in reverse order, at three, I'm going Boosie. I love Boosie. I've loved him ever since I first saw him, which was in Predator 2. The lions and the tigers. Oh my. Brilliant. So Boosie's at three. At two, Wilford Brimley as head of security, Bill Devasher. I think he exudes menace and sleaze, and he loves himself and has a massive ego. And when Cruz kicks the shit out of him, like you just mentioned, and he screams at him, Cruz screams at him, you sick bastard. it's like it's so much about him in that the fact that he uses the words "you sick bastard." It's like he's getting off on taking these photos.
Yes,
he's probably having a cheeky pocket wank over those photos. Like he is a really sick man. I think Brimley delivers. But number one, David Strathairn as Ray.
Fantastic. He's fantastic.
I think it's all down to his performance and his story that is the thing about this movie that I'm invested in. I'm not invested in Mitch at all. Honestly, like everything that made me well up, everything that I got emotional about, as you said, like him wandering off with Holly at the end, like I was just like, he's absolutely brilliant. Him getting his freedom, him escaping the feds, him arriving safely in the Caribbean, those moments when he sees his first sunset in years. Honestly, and this is a big swing, but I genuinely feel that his moments in this film and his arc is like my own mini Shawshank Redemption.
Wow.
That's how I feel. I feel so strongly about his performance in this movie. Admittedly, when he first showed up on screen, I thought he was Mitch's dad. Apologies to David Strathairn. He's only 12 years his senior. But yeah, I think he's his arc is what I would watch this again for.
He's really good. When he's like, when Mitch is like, I didn't tell them about you because, you know, and he's like, yeah, all right. And it's all done in the face and the eye acting. And he's like, okay, I probably would have done the same. And you think, no, you wouldn't. Mm. But you're just telling your little brother that, like, it's really good.
Brilliant.
Mine is Holly Hunter. She's fucking amazing. I can't believe I didn't mention it, but it's a long film and she's only in it for 6 minutes. But she's so, so good. So very good. So yes, I'll keep that brief. What would you change then, Alex?
We've already covered one of my big changes.
Shorter.
I'll gloss over it. But it is Mitch telling Abby he should tell her the truth about why he cheated on her, about cheating on her, and he does it for the reason that he wants her to know. That's taken. So my other one is kind of a big one, and we've touched on it throughout all of this conversation, especially towards the end of the movie. I love this script for its intelligence and its complexity, but I also hate it for the same reason, because I think it just gets swallowed up by its own desire to be smarter than it is, and it becomes too convoluted, and it's like trying to be really, really fucking clever. And like the end, you're just like, there are big moments in this movie that you are supposed to and should be big emotional moments for you as the viewer. But because you're playing catch up to what the script is actually trying to say in those moments, instead of going, yes, you are literally going, oh, okay, so that, right. And so it loses any sort of like power. So that's my problem with it. It's too complex and it thinks it's smarter than it is.
Okay. What about you?
Mitch has got a shirt with a machine gun at the end.
Sure.
I think you could have had fun. I don't think this film's long enough, and I think they should add in a subplot, like an Infernal Affairs subplot, where there's an FBI have someone on the inside of the mob, and the mob have someone on the inside of the law firm, and Mitch has got to figure that out too, as well as sort of fixing his problem. It's just a subplot. It's just a bit of fun. That's all the changes are. How about you, Vicky?
Just a bit of fun as well. Rewrite the whole thing. Get rid of the whole thing. It's a two-handed buddy movie with Mitch and Tammy. Mitch plays it by the book. Tammy does not. And when these two get together to take on the mob, that's what I honestly think. Yeah. They are so good together. Yeah. They are chalk and cheese, but they make it work. And it's fucking awesome. The other real change is that music has got to stop. The music, I can't cope with it.
Yeah, at the start, I was like, I don't think I can watch this. No,
and it never stops.
You get used to it.
I don't get used to it. I hated it. And then when it's the section in the Caymans, I was like, I'm now watching a caper. I was not expecting that. I find it so...
Bing, 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 but yeah.
It's incessant.
It occasionally sounds like the Stings in Seinfeld.
Yeah, which I don't enjoy.
Nope.
So there we are.
Great.
Now, we have got an issue here. Because we're going to go into the verdict. But I just remembered the verdict that we used, the sting is A Few Good Men.
Yeah.
Is that going to give it...
I think it's going to sway us.
We won't hear it right now.
No, because I haven't said the verdict yet.
Yeah, well, we're all waiting on him.
But yeah. Is it your job?
What? No, come on.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Let's do the verdict. Yes.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
Is that? I literally don't know what's going on.
Panic in your eyes.
But before we do that, do you want to know who plays Tammy in the TV series of The Firm?
Yes.
Juliette Lewis.
Oh, really?
Interesting casting.
Yeah. I can do that.
Okay, let's do this fast, I think. Yeah. Vicky, what's your favourite film this week?
Okay, here we go. The Firm, I'm just going to say, it's boring, but you have to watch all of it. A Few Good Men's great, but you really only need the last 20 minutes. And I find the persistent undoing of Galloway extremely jarring. I was cross at the running time of The Firm, but it is well paced. However, here we go. So it just doesn't have that shot of adrenaline that A Few Good Men does, even though you've got to wait for it. But to be honest, very few other things do. That scene is an absolute masterclass and powerhouse of writing, directing and acting and the whole nine yards. So really, for one scene, A Few Good Men.
Alex. Yes, as I just said in my changes about The Firm, the script is too murky or convoluted, so it robs it of the fist-pumping moments, whereas A Few Good Men is bloody full of them. Its final courtroom scene is stunning. It's A Few Good Men. We have a winner, and that is A Few Good Men, Chris.
Well, I thought this might be closer than it was.
Yeah,
it wasn't. You're in the hands of two great directors. I like how Abby is given much more to do than Joe between the films, but I got really distracted in the second half of The Firm because of the length of the film. I got really annoyed by it because of the contrivances. Plus, there's a reason I remember so many lines from A Few Good Men and next to none from The Firm, and that's why it's A Few Good Men.
Yeah.
Yeah, 3 for 3. Obviously, if you disagree with us, you're more than able to go on our poll when it goes up on Twitter and vote for which movie you'd like to have seen win this week, The Firm versus A Few Good Men. It'll be on Twitter at ClashPod very soon. Shall we look ahead to next week, though? We've got two more movies coming your way. Another pairing, another clash.
Mm. Unusual picks from Vicky. What are they, Vicky? Mm.
The choices for next
week. Yeah, wait, the clue first.
Oh, the clue is the lads have got all dolled up.
Oh, I know what it could be.
So it's Weird Science and it's Ex Machina.
Oh, interesting choices, Vicky.
Thank you.
Yeah, you know what? We'll talk about it next week, how you came up with this pairing.
I know a guy.
Oh?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'll save it for next week, but fucking hell,
that's what we always do.
Yeah, I know. I only because I watched Weird Science yesterday and I was like, okay.
I did as well.
Yeah, I haven't seen it since I was about 7. So.
Wow.
Hey, lots to discuss.
Yeah. All right then. So that is Weird Science on Monday and Ex Machina on Thursday next week. Weird Science versus Ex Machina. Do your homework. Right then. We'll be back on Monday with part one of that, which will be Weird Science. In the meantime, do subscribe to us on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Check them out on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. And of course, check out our new YouTube channel for some long form videos. Just type Clash of the Titles into the YouTube search bar. It's at the top of the screen. Have a lovely weekend. Bye-bye.
Clash of the Titles is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly. Seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.